Good evening, my friends. Welcome to the 12th of June, 2026. It is time for our Friday Night Live. And it is time. Vindication time. Come on. It's time for vindication. I guess two little things. One, do you remember that brave young Scottish woman with the two-hand axes who was trying to protect her friends from the immigrant sexual assaulters? Well, she's been vindicated in court, and it turns out that they were monsters who were preying upon children, and so that's been vindicated. Also, Tulsi Gabbard has just declassified documents which apparently show that the U.S. had, maybe up to 20, maybe 22 biolabs in Ukraine. So, I mean, imagine if Russia or North Korea was opening a bunch of biolabs just over the border in Mexico. I mean, some pretty hinky stuff was going on at the Canadian biolabs in Winnipeg. That's a topic for another time. But imagine if the mortal enemy of the United States, which had constantly lusted and thirsted for its destruction, was opening up a bunch of bio/bioweapons labs right over the border. You don't think America would do something? I mean, they're freaking out over, even though there was a fatwa against nuclear weapons, about Iran potentially having nuclear weapons, what about actual real biolabs right across the border? You don't think America would do something, but we can't ever trust the Ruskies, you know? Can't ever trust the Ruskies. So, two things in which I was correct to prognosticate on, and was hammered, of course, at the time for talking about. And, I'm sure that all of my restitution, hang on. Oh, I may just wet finger the wind here. Tastes like coffee. So, I'm absolutely positive, though, that all of the people who said, it's a filthy lie, any of these things are filthy, so de-platform him and get rid of him and all of that. Also, Dr. Fauci, as far as I understand it, was also being briefed on the potential or significant possibility of the lab origins of COVID in Wuhan. Do you remember how the virus just kind of popped into existence about 400 feet from the only bioweapons lab in the region? Yeah, strange that way. No. It came from bats 800 kilometers away. Yeah, because you know bats fly 800 kilometers. They're like migratory birds. They're like all of those butterflies that go down to the giant trees in Mexico. They just float around. So anyway, I would like to get your questions. Richard, I would love to chat with you again. Give me just a minute or two on. I never get to the text questions, which is kind of rude. So I'm sorry about that. I do want to get to the text questions. Feel free to throw them in. Good evening, everybody. So, one person asks, how do you bridge Hume's is ought gap? Hume said that to him, it was inconceivable how you could possibly argue logically from what you experience to how you think that experience ought to be. So I, of course, have an entire History of Philosophers series available to donors. I think it's 23 or 24 major philosophers up to, but not including, Immanuel Kant. Couldn't quite get to Kant. And one of them, of course, is Hume. And you should check this out for donors if you subscribe at freedomain.com/donate. Then you get all of these tasty shows. Oh, not to forget, Sunday morning, 11 a.m. It is, you know, I like to branch out a little bit. Burst into song from time to time. I'm working on some cat's eye dances. And also, makeup tutorials. Apparently, they're quite a thing. Making bird hands in sunglasses in cars with way too much makeup, complaining about men, number one. Number two, makeup tutorials are quite the thing. The last makeup tutorial that we did, where I ended up with a second head on my head, was very popular. And so, by popular demand, by request, we are now having what will be truly a revelatory exegesis of the makeup tutorial phenomenon. My daughter will be joining us this Sunday morning, and we will be doing makeup. And what that means is she has, she's ordered a bunch of stuff. She's ordered a bunch of stuff. And I will confess to being minorly alarmed, which is probably an underreaction. But she has ordered a bunch of stuff, which she will be applying to me, I think in layers, I think including sandblasters and roller blades. She will be applying that. It could be a Bugsy Malone spaghetti cannon or pie cannon. It could be something like that. I assume I will be fairly unrecognizable at the end of it, which means there's a possibility I may be returning to my youth. This Sunday morning at 11 a.m., I hope you will come by. She is very funny, and it's going to be most enjoyable. And also, I get to do her makeup. And I've warned her ahead of time that I will not try to make her look bad. I have a little bit of makeup experience because, of course, I was in the theater world, so you have to do your own makeup when you're an amateur. And so the only thing that may go wrong on Sunday morning, other than me falling in love with my own visage, with all of the various accoutrements that have been ordered for me, is that I'm going to overcorrect. You know, when you do these things, you have to do this on a bike, you wobble, you overcorrect, and you end up crashing. So I'm going to try and do her makeup well, but I'm probably going to overcorrect. And, oh, a little too much here. I'll add a little bit more here. Oh, I'll balance it over here. And then she'll end up buried under an asteroid's worth of Maybelline products. So we'll see. But that's generally the goal. All right. Enough dodging the challenging question. How do you bridge the is-ought dichotomy? So the is-ought dichotomy is the difference between if Bob pushes Jane off a cliff, she's going to fall, right? She can't do that Flintstones air pedal, so she's going to fall. And if she falls far enough, she's going to die. Hit her head on a rock and bleed out or skull crush or something like that, right? So the is Bob pushes Jane off a cliff. The is that Jane falls. The is that Jane gets injured. The is that Jane dies. Now, we are horrified by this and we consider this murder and so on. And Bob should be punished and castigated as a murderer and judged to be an evil guy and, you know, perhaps even put to death, certainly put in prison. And so the is the matter and energy. Certain amount of potential energy turns into kinetic energy, turns into Jane, you know, tumbling down the cliff, bumping her head, bleeding out. That's the is. Ah, but we say to Bob, you ought not do that. And Hume's question, which is a reasonable question, is to say, where's the ought? Where in the atom, void, and energy of the collection of atoms we call Bob, pushing the collection of atoms we call Jane off a cliff to the point where Jane becomes a collection of slightly less ert. She's an inert collection of atoms. Where is the ought? Ah, if I steal something of yours, then the matter and energy of your possessions or possession has transferred to my vicinity, right? Clump of atoms used to be over there. Clump of atoms is now over here. I grab your phone. Yeah, run. Grab your phone and run. Why don't I wait till it's on the map application so I don't have to enter any stupid passcodes. Passcodes? You parse things out? Passcodes. Passcodes. So, I mean, I know I went to boarding school. We're just practicing the luge, sir, but nonetheless, I should not pronounce it in such a anti-colonist kind of way. So where is the ought? You ought not steal. You ought not murder. Where is the ought? Now, religion, of course, solves this by saying the ought is God. God commands. God is the all-knowing. God is the all-good. God created the entire universe with the ought. And so, in a way, if you say a wild animal roaming free is not in a cage, but if you create a zoo and you put animals in a zoo, the ought is, well, it's a zoo. That's kind of what it's for. It's there, like, there to copulate in front of embarrassed school children and creep up to toddlers behind glass and remind us just how vulnerable they would have been in the past. So where's the ought? Where is the ought? And of course, Hume came up around shortly after the sort of rise of the scientific method. And the scientific method is that there is no ought in the universe, there is only the is. Because prior to the rise of the scientific method, the universe was an ought. There is special providence in the fall of a sparrow. I mean, I remember I was going to ask a girl out once when I was young and superstitious, and a huge tree branch fell not too far from us. Now, of course, a lot of people would say, that's a sign. That's a sign. I remember also once I was going to get into a relationship that I really probably shouldn't have. And the girl and I were sitting in a hot tub many moons ago. We were sitting in a hot tub and making foolish goo-goo eyes at each other. And, you know, I guess it's somewhat of a romantic environment-ish. Anyway, and I shouldn't have gotten into the relationship. It was a bad idea, nonetheless. I mean, we wouldn't need philosophy if all we ever made were good decisions, right? We wouldn't need nutrition if we only ever ate what we should. So anyway, so we were in this hot tub and then in a hotel, and a bunch of loud, tattooed, tubby guys came and said, hey, how you guys doing? Sup? And they were drinking, and it was just like the universe sent the fat, tattooed, beer belly guys to break up a romantic drift that would have had me spinning wheels and spitting blood for a moon or five. So before, everything was a sign. Everything was a sign. The universe is giving you a sign. If you got sick, it was because of sin. If your house caught fire, it's because you did something wrong. If something good happened to you, if your illness was cured, it was because you prayed well. So everything in the universe was an ought, because everything is designed, right? Like in animation, everything that's on the screen, like if you just film a movie, there's stuff in the background or whatever, right? But in animation, everything that's on the screen is there by purpose and by design. Nothing's there accidental. You don't just point a camera and get animation. Animation, everything's purposefully put there. The universe was entirely ought. And it was trying to puzzle people out. People were trying to puzzle out, well, what does this ought mean? You know, a crow landed on the windowsill and stared at me beadily. That's an omen. Bad things are going to happen. Oh, look, Robert Plant is singing at a concert. Singer for Led Zeppelin, and a white dove has landed on his hand. Of course, in the past, people, oh, that's an approval of God, has sent down his messengers, and everything was an ought. And science come along and says, okay, let's say, just for the sake of argument, that God isn't arranging everything like a dream at night that has meaning, that is trying to tell you something, or trying to teach you something, or trying to instruct you, or morally improve you, or punish you, maybe. You're not in a story. Maybe you're not in a novel. Maybe you're not in a cartoon. Maybe you're just an is. You're just a bunch of atoms and cells and clumps and blah, 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 right? So that's the question, right? That's the question. Where's the ought? If the universe is matter, energy, and void, and it's mostly void, like matter is hydrogen the way that living things are beetles. I don't know much about God, but I do know that he seems to be inordinately fond of beetles, because they're just so many of them, or I guess we're down to two now. So if the universe is matter, energy, and void, and it is an accidental clump of gathered together matter with no hand guiding it, no story behind it, no purpose in front of it, where do we get the ought? Of course, the ought is avoid hell, get into heaven, stay in the good graces of God, save your soul, avoid the devil, resist temptation. Those are all the oughts set up by God who created and designed and runs a morality play called Get to Heaven, Stay Out of Hell, Resist Temptation, Avoid the Devil. You're running obstacle race if your body trying to trip you up. Jesus trying to save you. The devil trying to take you down. Angels, demons, one shoulder, the other. Which way you turn your head is which way your soul goes forever. What if it's all just matter? Void, energy, accident. Where's the ought? Where's the ought in a game of chess? Where are the rules? Oh, well, they're on the paper. Okay, so somebody written it down, just a bunch of atoms. Where's the ought? It's not like gravity, right? Throw something up and down, throw something up and down. That's gravity. There's no rules in morality. Where's the ought? And people peeling themselves away from the idea that the universe was a morality play entirely set up to shepherd you to heaven and keep you away from hell, and that birds that flew over, clouds that flew by, the rain, the sun, the heat, the cold, the illness, the wellness, the babies, the not babies, all of these are signs sent by Almighty God to guide you to the good and away from the evil. But science was saying there is no ought that comes from consciousness. There is only the is of matter and energy. And we can say void, but void is not really an is, it's an absence of an is. So Hume said, where in the chess pieces are embedded the rules of chess? Well, nowhere. A train follows a track, right? Chess, you can, oh, you can't move there. You can, right? That's the problem. So, but you got to do that funky little L, right? That funky little dog leg with the knight. Well, you got to go, right? Two forward, one left, two forward, one right. No, you don't. You can move it. You can throw it. You can eat it. You can slap it under your armpit and do an Irish jig. You can do anything you want with it. It's in the mind. It's in the convention. It's in the agreed upon. But there's no ought from the is. So tell me if, I don't want to over-explain, but I obviously want a straw man. Sorry, I don't want a straw man. I want to steel man the argument, which is to have you understand the challenge of the is-ought dichotomy. Thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. You can tip, of course, freedomain.locals.com. And so, let me know. Have I got it right? Have I got it right? Is that a fair representation of the is-ought dichotomy as far as you see? Okay, yeah, I'll just make a message here. And maybe he's here, maybe he's not, but I want to make sure that before I reply to it, I want to make sure that people understand that I understand the is-ought dichotomy. All right, looks like we are relatively okay. Nobody's saying it's not. Okay. So how do you bridge Hume's is-ought gap? How can you logically argue from what you experienced to how you think that experience ought to be? Madame K says, correct. Who had the wildest dream? You know, I had the strangest dream. It's a great soundtrack for Brimstone and Treacle. So, yeah, so the way that you bridge it is, without a doubt, there is no moral rule embedded in humanity, in the cells, in the atoms, in the void, in the energy. We don't blame gravity for dragging Jane down to her bloody demise if Bob pushes her off a cliff. We don't blame the cliff. We don't blame the air for not providing enough resistance. We don't blame the clouds for not reaching down and cushioning her fall. We don't blame gravity. We don't blame the rocks she falls on. We blame Bob for pushing Jane off a cliff, right? We blame him for that. We say, you shouldn't have done that. If somebody steals from you, say, you ought not have stolen. Now, Hume would say, well, so the property, right? I don't know, a pair of glasses. You steal my glasses because whatever, right? You want to see better. So you steal my glasses. And so the atoms and energy that represent my glasses are not here. They're over there, right? The atoms have moved. And I say, you shouldn't have stolen. Okay, but where in the glasses is the ought not? Nowhere. It's a human convention. And that seems to make it subjective. Like, I like blue and tenors. So, how do we solve it? And, yeah, you do have the best dreams. Somebody had a dream where they referred to my concubines. And of course, I'm just so dimple-cheeked, halo naive. Concubines, isn't that what you get wheat off a farmer's field in? Concubine harvester, is that right? I think that's right. Oh, concubines. See, nobody who says, oh, concubines, actually has a concubine is a basic fact of nature, like gravity. So, the answer is, if you say you cannot get an ought from an is, then anyone who tries to get an ought from an is incorrect, and that's your first rule. It's like saying nothing is true. Well, is that true? Yes. Well, then something is true. So, if I say you can get an ought from an is, and Hume says, no, you can't, then he's giving me an ought from an is, which is there is not an ought in the is, therefore you shouldn't say that there is. And what that means is that concepts in the mind have to accurately represent things in the universe. Concepts in the mind have to accurately represent things in the universe. Now, they don't have to, like gravity. Gravity is kind of a have to, it's an absolute in the universe. So if I pick this up and I say, watch me eat this kumquat. That's such a fun word to say. And I feel it should only be said on OnlyFans. Come watch me eat this kumquat. Right? And I try and eat it. Well, I'm incorrect. This is my glasses, not a kumquat. So I may see my inner life more vividly, but I will not gain any vitamin C. So, if I'm going to claim that something is true, it almost sounds like a tautology, but it's not. If I'm going to claim that something is true, then it has to be true. Now, there's no is ought in the dreams that we have. If I had a dream last night that I'm riding a flying giraffe over, I love that line from one of the last Duran Duran songs, Come Undone, lost in a snow-filled sky. I don't know why I just love that line, lost in a snow-filled, so vivid. It's actually a pretty good poet, the writer for them. Simon Le Bon also became a sailor. Did he become a sailor? Am I on a drug dream? Anyway, so if I'm riding a flying giraffe, lost in a snow-filled sky, I'll make it all right. There's no ought or is in the dreams. It just is. Like, ought it have been a flying hippo? No, there's no ought because it's all self-generated. But the moment you're going to try and map mental concepts, ideas in the mind, to things in reality, then they have to be accurate, if you're saying that they're true, right? So I have my little lip balm here because I have lips as dry as a horrified virgin's. Where do these things come from? I don't know. If I say this is a flashlight, it's not, right? It's not even a pretend flashlight that's mimicking as, you know, I can open it up, have a look. There's my beeswax lip balm. So if I say this is a flashlight, it is not a flashlight. So the fact that it is a lip balm does not mean that I have to call it a lip balm in the same way that it's subject to gravity, right? Up, down, subject to gravity. As my ass is a little bit more every year. How often do you weigh yourself? Just by the by, I'm going to post this on X. I was just kind of curious about this. I used to weigh myself more, but then I realized it was just shallow vanity, and now I will weigh myself twice a year. I do the belt test. Do my belt loops still work? I just weigh myself twice a year. So the is-ought dichotomy, if, right? There has to be an if, right? You don't have to live in the same way that you are automatically subject to gravity. You don't have to live. if you want to live, you got to eat, you got to drink, you got to get rest, you got to take shelter, you got to keep your temperature somewhat stable. You know, these are the things, you got to breathe, right? If you want to live. Now, if you want to say something true about the world, then it has to correspond with the facts of the world, right? Here's another little, I was doing my test earlier. It's actually more blue, looks purple in the camera. Don't know why, I've given up on cameras. This is, I went through a whole AI thing setting up this camera a day or two ago. This purple ball, it's actually a blue ball, as I tell my wife. So it's a purple ball, but it's blue. So if I say this is a pair of glasses, worst monocle ever, right? So I couldn't figure out. This thing was just getting closer and closer, and then it hit me. Ouch, shouldn't have done that. Hard. So how do you get the ought from the is? Well, the first one you get is you cannot say that oughts exist in the matter and energy of the universe. The atom doesn't care where it goes. The gravity is not conspiring to kill Jane. It just is. So atoms and energy have no purpose, no goals, no morals, no values, no preferences, because they do not possess free will. There's no point lecturing a lion to become a vegetarian, or a leftist to learn economics, or a Marxist to not be a murderous child hater, because they're just predators, right? So the is-ought, I fully accept, there is no ought inscribed in the atoms of the universe. We do not live in a moral play created by God for our edification and elevation, to join the ranks of the angels by following his rules. That is not what the universe is. That's not what the universe is about. And there is no should, ought, must, moral, good, or evil written anywhere in the universe or in any of its properties or in any of its energies. Fully accept that, because you can't prove it otherwise. I mean, there is no purpose to the atom. And we are all composed of atoms. And if none of our individual atoms have a purpose, how can we have a purpose? Blah, blah, blah. And now I've talked about this before. There's emergence properties called consciousness, right? None of our atoms are alive, yet we are alive. And so there's emergent properties from an aggregation of entities or objects. I mean, you get enough dense matter together, you get a super dense entity where a teacup of it would fit the whole Earth, and it's called a black hole. So something that is so dense with gravity that even light can't escape its gravity. Once you pass that event horizon, you go in and you create a perfect loop of sticky jam all over the black hole. It's not a hole. It's an absence of tracking, because nothing, not even light, can escape its surface. It actually is the complete opposite of a hole. It is the most dense thing that can be conceived of outside of the aforementioned socialists. So how do we get the ought from the is? Because if you say something that you say accurately describes reality, it has to accurately describe reality. If you say, wouldn't it be cool if this was a flashlight? I'm saying, wouldn't it be cool if, not it is a flashlight, right? If I say this is a flashlight, I'm making a claim about the nature, purpose, and properties and capacities of a particular entity, which in this case is there for wetting my lips, not shining my way forward in the dark. So when you say this is true in the world, the ought is you're making a claim that it is true, therefore it ought to be true. Right? If someone says, I want you to live, while repeatedly stabbing you in the throat, then that's not a true statement, right? I mean, don't give me the tracheotomy stuff. I mean, vengefully stabbing people in the throat. So how do you judge or adjudicate the is-ought dichotomy? By recognizing that statements to be valid and useful must be true. So when it comes to morality, then we have universally preferable behavior, and people can't argue against universally preferable behavior without invoking universally preferable behavior. If they say, Steph, you should not promote universally preferable behavior because universally preferable behavior is false, then they're saying it is universally preferable behavior to promote true theories and not promote false theories. Right? So you can't argue against universally preferable behavior. It's like coming up to me and saying, Steph, I'm telling you, you don't exist and language has no meaning. I had this debate just this last week with a guy who gave me intellectual hives. You know, you just get this creepy sense that you're dealing with a crazy, manipulative person. That was my experience. It's out there for donors. It'll go out this weekend, I think. It's well worth listening to know when to bail, when to fold them. So you can't argue against universally preferable behavior. You can't argue against property rights because property says, I own myself, you own yourself, and we own the effects of our actions. So if I'm arguing for property and you argue back and you say, Steph, your argument for property is wrong. It's like you just affirmed my entire argument for property. So you just got to freeze frame debates and say, okay, what are all the implicit premises embedded in having a debate? Right? If somebody says to me, Steph, your argument that we own the effects of our actions is wrong, I say, well, whose argument is that? Oh, right, my argument. Therefore, I own the effects of my actions. My argument, right? You can't argue against UPB. You can't argue against property rights without affirming UPB and affirming property rights. You can't do it. And once you, and I know this takes a little while to massage into the brain, because we're looking for some external thing with no reference to what we're doing. And this is an example I made like 20 years ago. If I write you a letter saying, letters never get delivered to the right person, I've just detonated my own argument. Because obviously if I believe that letters never get addressed to the right person, I wouldn't write you a letter. But the fact that I've written you a letter on the assumption it gets delivered to the right person and the content of the letter is that letters never get delivered to the right person, then the form of the argument contradicts the content of the argument. And that's, I made this 15 years ago, I said this is one of my big contributions to philosophy, is saying, forget about the content of the argument. Everyone wants to just start engaging with the content of the argument. That's jumping into philosophy midstream, as Ayn Rand used to say. Forget the content of the argument. Look at all of the premises embedded in the form of the argument. Somebody argues with me and says, I don't believe that you exist. Well, then if you don't believe that I exist, why would you argue with me? If somebody says to me, the senses are invalid, then I would say, why are you using the senses to transmit the idea that the senses are invalid? Because you're requiring my ears to work or my eyes to read. And therefore, you are relying upon the validity of the senses to argue that the senses are invalid. Right? Somebody can't say language is meaningless. Language is meaningless is taking the written and verbal form, I guess it could be signed form as well, braille form, forms of human communication and saying that all forms of communication cannot convey any meaning. And the meaning that I'm using human communication to convey is that human communication cannot convey any meaning. That's a contradictory statement. And you don't argue the content, right? You argue the form first, because people will always use the form. It's like counterfeit currency, right? People will try to use the form of the argument to dismantle the possibility of argumentation. But if you're going to tell me, Steph, UPB is wrong and you should stop promoting it, then you've just affirmed UPB. Now, you haven't affirmed all of my moral arguments, but the moment someone corrects you, they're saying it's infinitely preferable to say things that are true, valid, accurate, logical, whatever you say. It's infinitely preferable to say true things than to say false things. So that's UPB. Truth is preferable to error. The moment someone corrects you, the moment someone debates you, the moment someone uses language, right? Because if they say language is a terrible form of communication, I'd say, okay, then give me your argument mentally. Give me your argument without using language, right? Thank you, John. I appreciate the tip. I really do. Just like Socrates himself, working for tips, coffee and lunch. Well, I guess there was no coffee back in ancient Greece, was there? South America, Africa. I know Ethiopian coffee can be pretty good. A little dry. Anyway, so that's how you get out of it. Now, once you say that the ought is in the relationship between the mind and reality. If you want to say things that are true, then they have to correspond with reason and evidence. That's the ought. The ought is statements claimed to be true ought to be true. So, but you can claim things to be true and have to be false. Sure, absolutely. But then everybody knows that they're false, right? So that's better. That's an improvement. So the is-ought is in the relationship between the mind and things in reality. Universally preferable behavior can never be overturned. Because any attempt to overturn universally preferable behavior requires an acceptance of universally preferable behavior. You cannot argue against universally preferable behavior. And so then universally preferable behavior exists. We just have to define it. It exists and it's valid because you can't argue against it. Now, some people can think, oh, that's wrong. But even if they say that's wrong in their mind, they're still violating UPB. So, they're still affirming UPB. So then all we have to do, since the ought exists in the relationship between things in the mind and things in the world, and universally preferable behavior is a valid concept, all we have to do is define what universally preferable behavior is. That's all. It's real. It's valid. We just have to define what it is. And then that's the four major proofs against rape, theft, assault, and murder that are in the book. So I hope that helps. Thank you so much for a great question. All right. Let us get to a caller. Also, call.freedomain.com. call.freedomain.com. I know some people have been missing calls lately. I've set up something where you get text reminders because, you know, different time zones and so on, people get confused. So, yes, Richard, you had, sorry, we didn't get you last time. I'm all ears. What's on your mind?
Hey, Stefan, how are you doing, man?
Well, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, thanks. I'm not fantastic. Well, I might be fantastic, but yeah, my life is pretty good, thanks. Anyway, thanks so much for the explication on UPB there versus non-reality. It's really awesome. Thank you so much for that. I did post a question, I don't know if you read it, with respect to the scientific method and UPB. But anyway, I have a comment to make on the Camelo Anthony podcast. I just finished.
Well, hang on, sorry. What was your question about UPB and science? I'm sure we can dust it pretty quick.
Yeah, I posted a comment on X. I'm not really on X very much.
Oh, on X. Sorry, I thought you meant here. Okay.
No, yeah, I did post a comment on X a few days ago, and I just commented that the correspondence between UPB and the scientific method were basically proofs, additional proofs. You've already made the argument for the proof of UPB, and I totally agree with that. But then I just commented that, you know, the scientific method corresponds perfectly with UPB, given the fact that the scientific method would not exist if it weren't for the necessity of truth. Anyway.
Just to point out something and hold your thought for a second there. So science requires that if you're going to say something true and valid about the universe, it has to conform to reason and it has to conform to evidence, because the universe is not self-contradictory, and you have to measure your predictive expectations of the behavior of matter and energy against what matter and energy actually does. And if your proof is logically consistent, or your conjecture or hypothesis is logically consistent and accurately predicts and explains the behavior of matter, you have a valid scientific theory. It's the same thing with UPB, with ethics. UPB refers to the methodology of reason and evidence, and also to specific theories, in the same way that science refers to the scientific method and the practice of science by scientists in particular. And so UPB simply says, if you have a theory about morality, and morality is a form of UPB, science is another form of UPB, then it has to be conformed to reason and it has to conform to evidence. And I'm, of course, immensely grateful for the scientific method, because it's what allows us to communicate, it what gives us comfort. Scientific method along with the free market, is the greatest gifts that the West in general, not just the West, but mostly the West, has provided to the world as a whole. And therefore, for me, I had to be informed by the value and benefits of the scientific method in designing a system of ethics, because the scientific method is one of the most successful formulations of the human mind ever. Yep. And along with the free market, and ethics has to explain why the scientific method has been so effective and why the free market has been so effective. And I think UPB does that. So, okay, thanks very much. And you had another question.
Yeah, I've got another question. Thanks so much for that. Anyway, I have a comment to make on the Carmelo Anthony podcast I just listened to. And this is a game I'm suggesting for all the parents out there that they can have with their kids. I call the game Situational Awareness. And I'm not talking about the Jason Bourne kind of thing, right? Which is fine, but I'm talking about a game that you can play with your kids. And it's called Situational Awareness. And in my experience, kids just naturally gravitate towards this game because it's an awesome game. They are totally switched on to it from quite an early age, actually. And you can go out there and play this game. And I would say to any parents out there, just beware that you're probably going to get your ass kind of whipped in this game because kids are just naturally better at this game than most adults are. And, you know, so, and it's an awesome game. There's so many variations you can play with kids on this game, and they can come up with their own ideas for how to play this. And for anybody out there wondering what situational awareness is, it's basically just a reality awareness game. And it's a game that it's a game that helps kids filter out the signal from the noise, so they can go out into the world, and then you can play this game. They can come up with their own ideas for it, and you can kind of say, okay, how many people were sitting in this restaurant, or where's the best exit for this restaurant, or, you know, all the kind of stuff like that. And kids will love this game, I guarantee it. And you can have so much fun with this, and you can kind of even you can even extend it to like a, you know, what's called SDR, like surveillance detection route, where you're taking a bicycle route or in a car or whatever, and you can say to the your kid, oh, which route should we take back to home, which will help us detect surveillance or something like that. You know, they'll get the game right away, and they can come up with all their own variations on this game, and it's a great way of helping kids resist unreality and propaganda and all that kind of stuff, because it puts kids in direct contact with reality out there. And, you know, I just want to make, I so appreciated your deconstruction and then reconstruction of the Carmelo Anthony stabbing, because I feel like, yeah, that was a great explication of that whole event. And so this could really be helpful to, you know, kids as they develop into adults, how to resist these circumstances where they, can evaluate a situation and then make the right choice. So in this case, you know, you just kind of go, oh, you know what? Okay, de-escalate, get out of there. You told the story about when you were with your friend and you were cycling, and then he kind of lost it, and you had to see, you know, you yeah, exactly. So, you know, so becoming aware of your situation is very, very helpful for
helpful. It's basic survival. Other people do this, and of course, let me know if you do. I do this fairly, and not all the time, but a lot of the times. Like, there's a suspension bridge up in northern Ontario, and a family friend was visiting, and we took her up, and we crossed the suspension bridge. And I said to the girls, my daughter and her friend, if the bridge was collapsing, where would you jump? Go!
Right.
Because you're above the trees. Which trees? I think about this stuff. I'm up there. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that would be a good... I could jump to that. I could make it to that tree if the bridge started collapsing. I could get there. And I think this is just of it's a man thing. You know, there are these memes about this guy and his girlfriend walking through the mall, and he's like, oh, that guy looks a little bit sketchy. Okay, there's an exit over there. That old woman is totally safe. And he's just situational awareness, and she's like, dum-de-dum, I think I'd like to get a coffee. You know, just dum-de-dum of what's going on in her head. So the situational awareness is a very healthy thing to cultivate. And there's a sort of meme among the younger generation, like, survival skills, zero. And of course, a lot of propaganda is there to try to get you to not see obviously dangerous situations. So for instance, with Carmelo Anthony, he literally said to the people, touch me and see what happens. He clearly was psychotically belligerent about leaving a tent. And actually, if somebody did wrote to me and said that you have to stay in the tent when it's raining, I think it was in Texas, because there could be lightning or storms, so maybe it's a requirement. I don't know. So maybe, you know, that was more essential than I thought. Who knows, right? But this kid, the black kid, was clearly not listening, not doing reasonable things, fighting, threatening, escalating. Ah, right? I mean, it's clear. And of course, a lot of, you know, there's this old statement, like, I wish that blacks were more like the ones we see on TV. And of course, I get the racism of that, and I understand that, and I appreciate that. But at the same time, you know, we also know if you have to go to a bus stop late at night, if there's an elderly Asian gentleman there versus a young guy, could be black, could be white, you know, dressed in gang colors, you know, sniffing glue, twitching, you know, we know. And so a lot of times, you know, what you see in the media is everything's reversed, everything's reversed, everything's reversed all the time. You know, in all of the shows, the white guy is the most racist when white people are the least racist. And this has been confirmed by countless studies. White people are the least racist of all of the ethnicities and races. And but you'll be told that the white person is always the most racist. The black boyfriend is always the most gentle, kind, thoughtful, and considerate. Where I pointed out that many years ago on X that 80% of black women report being assaulted in the most egregious kinds of ways. I think we can all imagine what that means, by black men before they reach the age of 18. And, you know, 1 in 20 in America, 1 in 20 black men is going to be killed somewhat over the course of his life. And so, like, black kids are more likely to kill someone than, you know, middle-aged white guys. And yet, so you always get the reversal, right? The black people are always the most gentle. And of course, there are wonderful, gentle, nice black people out there. I interact with them all the time. But it is there to say, the real danger, right? The real danger is those white guys, right? Or they say that the most cruel and nasty people around are the jocks. And all of the dweebs and the nerds are just thoughtful and sensitive and nice and would be great boyfriends and so on. It's not usually the jocks who go around being school shooters, right? It's usually the nerds, the excluded, the vengeful. And having spent my time, you know, I've had an incredibly blessed and gifted life as a whole. Yep. In that I've managed to go in a wide variety of circles. I've managed to move in a wide variety of circles. So I was in the nerd circles for sure. I mean, a Dungeons and Dragons guy and all that kind of stuff. And then I also did a lot of sports and some team sports and so on. And some of the nerds were incredibly vicious and small-minded and petty and aggressive. And a lot of the jocks were actually really nice, pretty helpful guys. So the entire purpose of the media is to give you the opposite of what you might want to be a little bit more alert to, right? So if there, and this is, I think the Reverend Jesse Jackson said after 30 or 40 years in the civil rights business, for those of you who don't know, he's a black community leader. So he said, you know, after 30 or 40 years in the civil rights movement, you know, if there's guys behind me on the sidewalk, it's late at night and I turn around, I'm still relieved when they're not black. That's what he said, right? And so, you know, there's a lot of people who will be like, okay, so there's a bunch of, let's say, I don't know, some group, right? Let's say blacks or some group, it could be Hispanics, could be white guys, could be, and it could be Asians if they look like they're in Yakuza or some criminal organization, right? and they're walking down, but the whole media has said, oh no, these people are super nice. You shouldn't judge people. You shouldn't judge people. It's like, but you kind of have to judge people because there's significant risks involved, you know, because in the movies, it's like the clean cut guy is always the vicious boyfriend, like the preppy guy with the nice haircut. Always, but you know who's the really nice, cool guy who actually comes to your rescue is like the tattooed guy, you know, who rides a motorcycle and doesn't have a job and has a lots of shady income and so on. And so it's just programming you to do the opposite of that, which is generally the safest path. And it's, of course, I mean, lions want to program the zebras to not be alarmed of lions because it makes their hunting a whole lot easier. So when I look at the media, and you'll see this all over the place, all the time, it is just telling you to do the opposite of what is generally going to be a safe course, right? So people see some dangerous looking people walking down the street and they say, well, I don't want to be prejudging people. I don't want to be bigoted. I'm going to assume. And it's like, no, that's not. I mean, there's two things true in psychology. Two things true in psychology. One, IQ, very real, very valid. Number two, stereotype accuracy is a very real thing. You don't judge everyone, of course, by stereotypes, right? I mean, if I met Dr. Thomas Sowell, the great black economist. I mean, I only say black because it's relevant to the story. I don't care that he's black. He's a brilliant guy. If I met him walking down the street, I'd beg him to come for a coffee with me because he'd be a fantastic guy to chat with. I mean, what a delightful thing, right? But if there's anybody thuggish looking, then you have to be alert and aware of that. So the situational awareness is if someone is not obeying simple rules, if there's some place they shouldn't be, if 15 or 20 times they're not listening and not doing the reasonable thing, and then they say, you touch me, see what happens if you touch me, and then they start reaching for the backpack, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out. Don't touch him, don't grab him. If somebody says, don't touch me, see what happens if you touch me, see what happens. Don't see what happens if you touch them. Don't do that.
Yep.
In the same way that if the pit bull is like foaming and spitting and growling and yanking at its leash, don't go pet it. Don't think you can fight it.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. 100%. You know, and I think this is such a valuable thing. We could, you know, I don't have any children of my own. I know you have a daughter. But for everybody out there, I think this is such a great way to introduce them to, reality awareness, and you can make a game, you know, like I said earlier, you can make a game out of it. They'd just be fully on board with this game because it's so easy. Children are naturally kind of naturally switched onto this stuff, and you know, this is a great way to help them become aware without shame, you know what I mean, like without the pushback of, oh, you know, everyone's nice and all this kind of stuff, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's just a great way of teaching children to be aware of reality. And then that's a confirmation for children because, you know, children are naturally aware of reality and they want to learn more of it. They're hungry for it. They're like sponges. You know, like you've mentioned before, like how incredible it is to see children learn English, you know, the language, whatever the language is they're brought up with, how quickly they pick it up. And it's incredible, right? Like, you know, it's amazing to watch that. And then that's a great indicator of like just their hunger for reality, right? Because that's what it is. And yeah, so anyway, I just wanted to make, you know, give you great, you know, great credos for your deconstruction and your reconstruction of the whole Carmelo Anthony thing. And then the other one, you know, there's lots of stabbings going on around the world. And it's just horrific, right? And it's unnecessary, regardless of like who the victim or the perpetrator is. If you you can just get out of that situation much sooner once you detect what's going on. And then you can, you know, just leave or, you know, get out of that situation. And then instead of that, if you're not aware of what's actually going on, then you can end up getting stabbed, right? And that's
terrible. And I would say in particular, your courage should be proportional to the stakes Mm-hmm. Right. So if there's a home invader and you've got to take aggressive measures to protect your family from a home invader, then yes, you should do that. A tent in the rain is not high stakes.
Yeah, yeah.
And this idea that you're just going to go chest bump and thump, and people have this weird idea of aggression, like you can win. It's very rare that you can win in aggression. And the law is kind of set up that way.
Yep.
Sorry, could you just do me a favor? When you call in, I love having the conversations, but you keep saying yep in my ear, and it's really kind of distracting. If you could just wait, just do me a solid, just wait till I'm done, because then I think you're about to say something and it kind of throws me off. So if you don't mind,
okay,
you don't mind, thanks. So you can't win in the law with regards to violence, because winning is a decisive victory. But in the law, if you have a decisive victory, it means you weren't in any particular threat, and then you lose in the eyes of the law. Again, it's not legal advice. It's just my understanding of the law. All you can do in a situation of self-defense is survive. You can't decisively win, because you have to be in imminent danger of grievous bodily harm or death, which means all you can do is survive. So there's all of this crap out there in movies and TV shows and books and so on, you know, like Tom Cruise, he goes out of the bar with five guys and he's like, yeah, two of you are going to walk away. And he fights and so on, right? And then he just decisively wins and he walks away and there's no consequences. But that's not how violence works in the real world. And in particular, it's not how violence works in America. In America, if Tom Cruise beats up five guys, he's going to have five lawsuits. He's going to get charged five times. He's going to be sued. And he's going to spend the next 5 years in court, and he's going to probably have to end up paying a lot of money. Oh, you know, he hurt my neck, and I didn't even attack him. And because, you know, let's say there aren't any cameras, because people will often go and have fights where they know there aren't cameras and so on. So then it's just Tom Cruise's word against five guys' word. Oh, he jumped us. He beat us up out of nowhere. We tried to talk him. Right. So in the movies, the good guy beats up all the bad guys and walks off into the sunset. The bad guys just lie there, groaning, right? That's not how it works in the real world. In the real world, if you kill the guys, you're going to jail for murder, because all five guys kind of been trying to kill you, at least at the same time. And if you just injure the hell out of them, then they're going to limp back home, and their moms are going to say, who did this to you? And you're not going to say some 5'8" guy with great hair. You're going to say, this guy just blindsided us out of nowhere. Oh, well, you gotta go to the cops. You go to the cops, and we all arrange our stories together, and the cops are going to come and arrest you. And if the cops don't work, then you start a lawsuit for your injury and blah, blah, blah. And I mean, this is the way that it works. But people have this idea that you can just, you know, have some big altercation and everything's going to be fine. And it's why I've stayed out of fights. I mean, I think I've showed I have some physical courage. Like, I marched into tear gas in Hong Kong with the anti-communist protesters. And so I think I have some reasonable levels of physical courage. I do things that are, you know, you go rock climbing and things. I do things that require some level of physical courage. I think I have sort of an Aristotelian mean, not too much, not too little. Too much is foolhardiness, too little is cowardice. But I won't get into a fight, because you never know what's going to happen. You think, what are you going to do? You're going to pick this guy out and you're going to throw him. Let's say Austin Metcalf, you pick this guy up and throw him out into the ring. Get him out of my tent. I'm going to get out of my tent. I'm going to assert my dominance. Right? Okay. So let's say you do. You throw him out. You throw him out into the ring. Let's say that the young black fellow didn't stab him and just gets thrown out into the ring. And then what? You think that's it? You think that's over? You think that's all done? Nope. Because now you've made an enemy who's kind of a psycho, right? I mean, obviously capable of great evil, because he stabbed this poor young man in the chest and killed him. So now you've got an enemy who's gunning for you, and he's going to go and tell his friends. And his friends are going to be like, that racist, blah, 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 you know, and now you've got him and his friends gunning for you. And then what? Like, it's like starting a war. Like, I mean, obviously it's written much bigger. Where does it go? Where does it go? I mean, how many people thought, you know, if we arm the Mujahideen in Afghanistan against the Soviets, that's going to lead to the Twin Towers going down and the Patriot Act, which was suspiciously hot off the press and ready to go even before that. So you don't know where violence goes. I mean, a friend of mine's wife was on jury duty, and there was a guy who was in a bar fight, and he punched the guy. The guy staggered backwards, fell down some stairs, died. Boom! Manslaughter. You don't know. Unless it is an extremity of self-defense and someone's in your home, in my advice, don't do it. Don't do it. There is so little benefit and such a great cost. You need to do that cost-benefit analysis, right? It's the same thing with resisting the police. God forbid you ever get arrested. Don't be a street corner lawyer. Don't argue with the cops. Take your time. Argue it in court. Don't argue with the cops because they're authorized to use force until you comply or die. They are authorized to use force in general until you comply or you die. Yep. I'm sorry. I didn't make the rules. Those are the rules. So people walk into these violent situations thinking there's something good that's going to come out of it. I mean, let's say you beat up some guy. Then what? You think he's going to just let it go? Nope. Especially now, he can find you on social media. He's going to find a way to get you back. And then you have 1 3-minute fight. And then how long are you looking over your shoulder? And how long are you, like, he's going to find some way. And he's not going to do it alone, right? So
yep.
As best as you can, try to avoid violence. Try to stay out of the way of violence. And, you know, I mean, Lauren Southern, when she was back on Piers Morgan, I think, recently debating with Andrew Wilson, a very unsatisfying debate. But anyway, when we had security, right, when we were in, because of the amount of violence, death threats, bomb threats, and so on, and actual violence, we had security. And so when there were protesters outside, it was really sad that it was raining. We had some extra umbrellas and their, you know, hair dye was dripping down and their mascara was dripping down. It's all very sad. Then we went out, we gave them some umbrellas. We talked to them for a little bit. Now, we had security and I did not go within stabbing distance of the protesters, but I would go out and talk with them and try and understand if there was any common ground that we could come across. And yep. It was actually not a terrible conversation, but I wouldn't go and give them a hug. So sorry, I asked you to stop talking. Now it's all yours. And if anybody else has any comments or questions, please feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, my example would be like, you know, I have fire extinguishers in my house, right? And I only have them in the hope I'll never have to use them. And I feel like that should be somewhat of a model for how we go about in the world, that we try to avoid conflict at all costs, you know? You know, if that involves running away, fine, it's great, run away. Like, but please don't put yourself in harm's way just for the sake of one's ego or, you know, proving oneself or anything like that. It's much better to, much better to see that early and, you know, just leave. Don't wait till the last second and then have to, like, you know, get stabbed or get hurt or things escalate or whatever. You know, learning how to see these things early is very, very valuable.
Yes, it is. And learn how to back down. Learn how to back down because you never know how much someone else is willing to escalate. And if you don't know how, I mean, because fights generally among people you don't know, if you don't know how much someone is willing to escalate, then you just have to learn to back down. People call you a pussy, man. You're a coward. You back down. You totally cucked out. It's like, yes. And you know what's cool? My heart is still beating. And I don't have a brain injury. And I didn't crack an eye socket. And I didn't lose 3 teeth. And I didn't, like, learn how to back down. I mean, pride is a terrible thing. Vanity is terrible for women. Pride is terrible for men. Your status is in regards to your conscience, not in regards to the applause or boos of ignorant fools. I mean, the same friend I talked about where I had the crazy attack from him about the bike. Now he fought. He fought. He'd go out and have fights. And I told him, I don't go have these fights, man. This guy's huge. I would go out and fight guys 50% bigger than him. don't, what are you doing? And, you know, he died young. And it's like the sad ending of the movie Stand By Me, where the guy who's good at calming everyone down gets into some knife fight, gets stabbed and dies. Why on earth would you get involved in somebody else's knife fight? Why on earth would you get involved in somebody else's knife fight? It's crazy. It is saying that your life is to be a disposable rent-a-cop for no pay.
Yeah.
It is such a tragic lack of self-esteem to get involved in other people's violent altercations. And I wouldn't do that. You know, I've said this to friends, you know, what are we going to do if something goes down? It's like, I don't know what you're going to do. I'm out of there. I don't do that. What could you possibly gain? Covered in dust and glory, as Mark Twain writes about. But no, what is that again? What is that? Oh, your pride, you fought and you... Look, I get this. So when I was younger, people would fight and, you know, mostly shake hands and people didn't escalate too much. But people are kind of nuts these days. And especially if you're dealing with less intelligent people don't know how to de-escalate, because de-escalation requires self-mastery, and self-mastery requires intelligence. These are the people who fail the marshmallow test. These are the people with no inner life. These are the people who are just void of reactions and status and aggression and win at all costs. They don't think about the future. They don't think about tomorrow. They don't think about consequences. They just can never lose in the moment. And it's not, my mother was very smart. She was one of these people too. Just can't lose in the moment. I'll win no matter what, even if it destroys everything about my life. I will never back down. And if you're fighting people who won't back down and who will win at any cost, you're gonna get seriously hurt. Because they will twist your nuts. They will poke you hard in the eye. They will bite your ear off, Mike Tyson style. They will go for the knees, right? And if you get wrecked in your knees, that can be a lifelong pain problem. That can be a lifelong opiate problem. Your life can be completely ruined. They will go for the groin. They will use their heel to shove your nose into your brain, your cartilage into your brain. I mean, they will fight dirty. They will do anything. This isn't like the old fisticuffs and Queensbury rules and so on. A street fight is an absolute ugly, vicious brawl where if you win decisively, you're probably going to end up on trial. So, and also you have to have the self-control to know exactly when to stop. So you're pounding a guy. At what point when you're pounding a guy, are you pounding him against the law? I don't know. When's he disabled? People can say, oh, he went down and bro kept pounding him for like 30 seconds, right? Okay, well, the jury is going to have to adjudicate that about whether you maimed him or you killed him, grievous bodily harm, manslaughter. How do you know exactly when to stop? Well, if you have the self-control to say, okay, well, he's down, I know exactly when to stop, this, that, and the other, then you have the self-control to de-escalate and get out. This is my big advice to everyone. Let idiots win. I know that sounds odd. I'm not talking like in a debate or whatever it is, I will not let idiots win and all of that, but a debate is a civilized thing. Let idiots win. Right? If this young fellow wants to stay in the tent, and he's not going to leave the tent, and he's threatening the hell out of anyone if they touch him, let him stay in the tent. Let him have his corner. Why? It's not your tent. He's not threatening your baby. He's not about to assault your girlfriend. He's just sitting in the tent. Maybe he was being a jerk, in which case, you leave the tent. It's not the last stand in Gallipoli. It's not the gates of Vienna. It's not Passchendaele. You can leave. Let idiots win. Let idiots win.
Yeah, it's not worth it, is it?
Because idiots don't have a concept of any kind of honorable winning or losing. They don't. It's just domination at all costs and escalation at all costs. How can you win against that. The only way to win is not to play. I mean, could you imagine me getting into shouting matches with my mom? She's still alive, I think. I mean, I think, I'm sure my family thinks I'm just a terrible guy, and they read my page, and it's, oh, it's a terrible guy. Okay, let him have it. I don't care. Let him win. Let people think you're a bad guy. Let people think you're a coward. Who cares? It's just thoughts. You know what you care about? A rusty blade straight through your heart. That you should care about. That you cannot survive. People thinking you're pussied out, man. You're cucked out. You're a weakling, a coward. Just words. It's only syllables. It's not bladed savagery straight to the carotid. Let idiots win! Don't, as is with trolls too, right? Trolls will try and bait you into engaging with them in no intent of any truth pursuit or anything like that. And then they walk away and, you know, we had this debate a week or two ago with the guy who's like, yeah, man, with rationality rules, you totally lost. Of course, that's a goading thing. I feel it, right? I'm a human being. I'm healthy. I'm happy. I'm a human being. So there's a goading thing. You totally lost. He dominated you. He owned you. He blah, 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 blah. Took you to school, schooled you. And like, okay, so this is just goading language, right? To try. And I'm like, okay, just... I recognize that idiots use goading language rather than actual proof. Just tell me where I'm wrong. Like, forget all the language of you're such an idiot, or you got things wrong, or you don't understand this, you don't understand that. It's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Shut the fuck up and tell me where I'm wrong. Like an actual adult would, right? Just a sort of throwing words. And of course, you know, if people won't define their terms, if they won't address rational arguments, if they keep changing the topics and so on, and then you hang up on them, and then what do? Everyone does the same thing, right? They say, oh, I challenged Steph, and he couldn't handle it, and he just ran away. He just kicked me out of the... He couldn't handle any tough questions. Like, of course they're going to say that. Let them have their pathetic, stupid little victories. Let them have it. Let them have this little stupid rock they pluck out of their ass and say, oh, it's such a diamond. Oh, look at my precious. Let them have it. I don't care. I mean, oh, of course, at the time, I'm a little goaded and get a little punchy and, you know, the masculine energy flows. And I get all of that. And there's nothing wrong with that stuff as well. You don't want to be bloodless and not care about anything to do with this stuff. But yeah, all of the people who like, there was this, I don't know, it's still this rumor around for years and years and years that when I reviewed the movie Frozen, that I logged in as a girl and said what a great analysis it was because it showed up. Under my name. And that's because Google Plus, the comments went through Google Plus and then ended up back on YouTube and all of that. And people are like, oh yes, Steph, he commented, he pretended to be a girl commenting on one of his own videos. That's how sad he is. And he totally got owned by this person and he's a total blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yep, you can have your victories. You absolutely can. You can have your victories. Think I'm an idiot. Think that I log in as a girl to comment on my own video rather than do something fun with my wife or daughter and come up with some great new philosophical thoughts. Yeah, that's what I'm doing, is creating alt accounts as teenage girls and commenting on my own videos. And it's like, okay. So it's funny because like all of the people who, you know, this is back in the day, of course, it could be more recently, right? All the people who were like, ah, oh, Steph is an idiot. It's like, well, I guess you missed out on Bitcoin then, didn't you? I mean, look at your victory, man. Look at what you won. You missed out on Bitcoin when it was 5 cents. That's what you win. You win having shitty relationships, not having any morals, not telling the truth, not having a good conscience. You missed out on peaceful parenting. You missed out on great conversations that help people heal inner wounds and move on with their lives. And you missed being lovable. You missed having a family. You missed having a wife who cares about you. You missed the biggest investment opportunity in the history of humanity. And all for what? So you... So you could call me a racist or you could call me a misogynist or something. It's like, okay. I mean, look. Excuse me. Look at what you won. What did you win?
Yeah.
When you're still in your parents' basement and I'm having a great time with my family and friends are doing great shows. And I mean, look what you won. Ah, good for you.
Yeah, it's really
sad.
There
are people who used to run entire, they used to run entire websites dissecting everything I said, and he's such a bad guy, and he's such a hypocrite. And the really sad thing is, of course, all the people who, oh, he's a cult leader, and he just destroys families and so on. And that's really quite sad, because they got driven away from some arguments for peaceful parenting and against spanking. So they probably ended up abusing their kids, which is why those statements were made in the first place. So it's obviously a little more serious. But for the other people, it's like, they won. What do they win? I mean, I have a wonderful life. I'm blissfully married. I have a great relationship with my daughter and great friends. And I was just down visiting a bunch of friends in New Hampshire recently. Had a wonderful week of, exciting, challenging conversations. And we played cards and laughed so hard that I was crying. I mean, and that was, and so what if other people won? Well, they've lied, they've slandered, you get the basement of the fucking mountain, you get to eat raw fish, and you get a ring of invisibility to the future. And Of course, the people who slandered, lied, and attacked me, they're going to be judged by the future. And I don't know why people don't understand that. you're going to be judged by the future. And I'm more and more correct as time goes along. And you are going, and I'm a very good person, and I bring a lot of virtue and truth and goodness to the world. And I have prevented probably close to 2 billion attacks on children over the course of 21 years. And then everyone who's lied about me has furthered the cause of child abuse and the destruction of the young. And that's going to be absolutely clear. In the future, I'm going to be like one of the people who was lied about because they wanted to end slavery, or one of the people who was lied about because they wanted more equal rights for women. I'm going to be the hero in the future, and everyone who thinks that they're the hero is just a sad, pitiful villain who's going to be held in contempt forevermore. Amen. And what do they win? So let idiots win. Honestly, there's almost nothing more liberating in this world than just let idiots win. Let the people who hover over the edit page on Wikipedia and have just got to say terrible things about me. I mean, I can't imagine why anyone would be so against someone who's exposing child abuse, except, I don't know, child abusers. I mean, that's what I assume. I don't have any proof. That's what I assume is motivating all the people who lie about me, is that they have a terrible conscience and I'm helping victims who they want to victimize. Right. Of course, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're going to tell the truth on the mafia is going to lie about you and try and get you killed, which has certainly happened before. So let idiots win. Let them win. Don't engage with people who are trying to engage with you in bad faith, and don't engage with people who are just going to escalate. I don't play with people who don't play by the rules, and the rules of philosophy is reasonable discourse. Heated tempers is fine. Getting annoyed with each other is fine. That's part of the human condition. We're not robots. We're not Spock. But I don't play with people who don't play by the rules. And it's the old thing. Like if you play chess with a pigeon, the pigeon just shits on the board, knocks everything over, and struts around like it won. Let the pigeon win. Let the idiots win. And that's the greatest liberation that you can possibly get. And then you could just move beyond all of this. Like, hey, look at these kinds of people the way that you would look at ants from an airplane. So they've won.
Yep.
Okay, you get what you win, and I get my life. All right, is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I just want to add one last thing there, Stefan. Like, stay away from drama addicts, Because these people are drama addicts. They're addicted to drama.
What do you mean by drama?
Well, as long as they can provoke more drama, if I get into an argument with somebody like that and they just... they just want to further the drama in bad faith, then I'll just say, okay, you know what? We're done here. Okay, I don't need drama in my life, and therefore I don't need any more of this drama. And then they just don't know what to do next because they're addicted to drama. It's not about the argument; it's just about the drama. And as long as they can provoke drama in a person, then they're happy. Doesn't matter whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, or hurts them, or whatever. They're just addicted to drama. And I just say, you know what? I don't actually need drama in my life. I really don't. I don't want any drama in my life. And so therefore, no, you can go away and I'll find someone else who's more serious.
People who lack self-control always end up having to control others.
Yep.
And this is where censorship comes from. People who can't react People who can't manage their reactions to troubling information always want to control the dissemination of troubling information, especially if it's true, because then they can't just say it's bigoted and wrong. And so people provoke others because they can't control themselves. And also, there's a lot of people who only feel that they exist when other people are interacting with them. And if they can't get positive interactions, they're thrilled with negative interactions. And yeah, it's very, very sad. All right. Well, thank you again. Always a great pleasure to chat. And thank you for, we have an odd void of listeners wanting to call in. Oh, I lie. Oh my God, do I lie like a rug? All right. So sorry. We have another caller. I didn't see it. It was below the tiny screen on my phone. Go ahead, my friend. M2.
Is it fine here?
Yeah, you're pretty quiet. Go ahead.
Is that better?
No.
Gosh. Maybe someone else can go first.
No, go ahead. I can just turn you up.
Great. Okay. First time long time.
I'm sorry. I don't know. Are you on a speakerphone on the other side of the room? Can you just move the microphone closer to your mouth?
Like I said.
What?
You can't hear me, right?
I can just vaguely hear you. I don't understand how it's possible to have audio this bad unless you're calling from like 1972. All right. I don't think we're going to be able to. Are you going to talk?
Can you hear it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so bizarre to me. I mean, honestly, it's a $20 headset and you're totally fine. I don't understand why people call you. Steph, can you hear me? Is that all right? All right. Well, no problem. No problem. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Really do appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much, everyone, for dropping by. If you're listening later, call.freedomain.com, set up your public or private call. It is really, really such a powerful conversation. I've got testimonials as well. You can check those out. And it's an hour or two of your time and could change your entire life. I'm not kidding. I'm that good. It's kind of true. I am. I mean, there's things I'm not good at, but these kinds of conversations is a spectacular wheelhouse of mine. So call.freedomain.com, public call, private call. Absolutely up to you. Shop.freedomain.com for your merch and peacefulparenting.com. If you could please share the link, I would really, really appreciate that. Lots of love, my friends. Have a great night. Bye.